Warning: The Mended Futures podcast contains stories told by guests that may be sensitive to some people. Viewer and listener discretion is advised. The opinions expressed by guests do not reflect the views of the hosts and/or producers of this podcast.
There are going to be some amazing nuggets dropped by
Raven Johnson. She works for 518 as a part of our family care team. She's the program evaluation and data analyst for that team.
She's a military spouse. Mm-hmm. They have traveled to many different communities. She has a varied, a very varied academic history. Mm-hmm. So we
and volunteer history.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
We hope you enjoy, but we hope you are always thinking about from each guest story, how can you decide your place along the river?
Amen. We hope you enjoy. So you might have noticed that Allison and I are wearing same color, pretty similar clothes.
We planned that.
Don't lie to them.
Yes, we did not.
But we're just so in sync.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We could break out into song.
We could. But instead, we're going to talk to our guest.
Yeah, good idea.
We have Raven Johnson today.
Hello, ladies. Hello.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Who are you, Raven?
Whoa, big question. Who is Raven? Wow. That's a question that I feel like I've asked my own self a lot in different seasons of my life. I think now, presently, I feel like calling myself really just like a child of God is the best thing because it keeps me grounded in everything that I do because I do wear so many hats. Right now, I am the Program Evaluation and Impact Analyst for 518, and I do work over on the Family Care Team. And it's funny because that's not what I started doing when I started working here, but that's what I do now. I am a wife and a mom. I'm a wife of 10 years almost, and I have two boys, 9 and 7.
Wow.
9 and 7, and a military spouse. We've been in the Lynchburg area for about 2 years and a half. Wait a minute. It's 2025.
Yeah. Just catch up for a second.
Yeah. So we've been here for a little bit, but I mean, yeah, many different titles. I think those are the main ones.
Mm-hmm. So you came to Lynchburg for the military?
Okay. Yeah, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not typical. Yeah, so there's not like a military base around here, obviously. But my husband is, he is active duty military, and he got an opportunity to go to school full time and commission.
Got it.
Yeah, and so before we moved here, he was attending Liberty Online. And so we had the opportunity to attend in person and also be active duty. So we came to Lynchburg.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So is your time here temporary?
Very much so. Now, so I say that, and of course, I know that it's temporary in light of the fact that we're on a contract, right? Mm-hmm. But I've learned that God can do anything. The last duty station we were at got extended by like a year, you know, and so anything could happen. I stay open to the possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were you in Germany last?
We were.
Wow.
We were in Germany for 4 years prior to moving here to Lynchburg. I could say all kinds of things about that. But
so your babies were born in Germany?
Nope. So my youngest was born actually in Tennessee. But yeah, he was turning two on the flight over.
Wow.
Yeah, to Germany, which was kind of a mess. It was delayed for like days, but by the time we finally got on the plane, it was his second birthday.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. So, no, my youngest was born in Tennessee, and then my oldest was born in Indiana. So,
wow.
Mm-hmm, all over the place. I was actually born in Germany.
Really?
Yeah. My parents are veterans. My dad retired, but they had me in Frankfurt. So when we were in Germany, I was like, okay, it's my birthday, the first year. Actually, I wanted to go to Prague, and it didn't work out.
One of my favorite cities on the planet. I love Prague.
Prague, amazing.
Have you been to Prague?
I wish.
So Mended Futures on location is what I'm feeling.
We're just going to go on tour.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, I wanted to go to Prague, but it didn't work out. And so I was like, you know what? We'll go to Frankfurt because it's where I was born. And so we went there and hung out for a day. But yeah.
Wow. You have a unique and varied volunteer and professional background, maybe because of the moves. You know that your communities are temporary in nature, or that your lifestyle is transient. So you have gotten the opportunity to work and volunteer lots of places. Mm-hmm. Your experience ranges from boots on the ground intervention to data analysis. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the journey you've been on and how you got to 518 Family Services. So a little while ago you said, and it's not what I started doing here. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I actually really appreciate this question because I don't often get or take opportunities to like tell people about my history because it is so varied. And so I try to just focus on, well, what is actually relevant for right now? Like my resume, if you will, is easily like multiple pages long. I am wondering if I should start at the beginning and work my way here or if I should go backwards. And I feel like it's normal to start at the beginning. Like that's what people do. But for me, it's like proximity helps. And so like, to go backwards makes the most sense or else we'll like be here all day.
Yeah. This is your show. So do whatever you want.
Okay. So I said now I am the Program Evaluation and Impact Analyst for 518, a position that is newly created, and I was the first person to fill it.
Congrats.
And thank you. And it's kind of amazing, and I could talk about it on its own, but I'll try to tell it through the story of my varied experiences. So the job I applied to here was the Safe Families program coach. And I applied to it while we were still back in Germany because I knew we were coming back stateside and I was trying to get back into the workforce. But since I'm going backwards, I'll get into that. And so I applied to be the Safe Families program coach because I read that it would give me an opportunity to work with parents. And I enjoy working with parents because while children are my, like, I want to impact the lives of children. I feel like the parents are the key to being able to do that. And so I was happy about that opportunity. But then also it was part-time. And so I knew that coming back to the States, I didn't want to get into a hurried and rushed and busy life, because that's really easy to do here. And that is not the life that I had when we were in Germany. And I really liked the life that we had when we were in Germany. It was slow and easy. You know, the stores closed around 8 at night.
Wow.
Yeah. Nothing was open on Sundays except for some restaurants, you know, and it was just nice. It was slow. And I didn't want to jump back in because varied history. I'm known for doing many things, being all over the place. But anyway, so I wanted a part-time job and that one was part-time. And so it allowed me to still be involved in my kids' lives because I was a stay-at-home mom when we were in Germany. And during like, you know, their foundational early years. And it was important to me to stick with that because it's not an opportunity that I would have chosen on my own. And I'm actually in school right now. So I'm like, I have school, I have kids, I have new place, and I'm not sure what the military is going to throw our way. And so I need to be a little flexible, but I can't not do the thing that I'm passionate about doing. So this job allowed me to do that, right? So I applied when we were in Germany and I interviewed from Germany, which was wild. And I got the job offer while we were still in Germany. And so they held it for me until I got here, which was a huge blessing. I was over the moon excited. Yeah, I was hired to be the program coach here. And then the way that things just kind of happened with the program, with the agency, and I guess honestly with my skill set and desires created a pathway for this new position. I'm not sure of the underworkings of it, but I'm here now. And then gladly, by the way, I love what I get to do now. I loved what I did before, but this is, yeah, this is it for me. So I mentioned when we were in Germany, I was a stay-at-home mom for 4 years. I say that I didn't choose to be a stay-at-home mom because I like to work. And when I was growing up, I always thought, you know, you can't do both. You can't be a mom and have a career, right? And so, or a family at all. And I had believed that lie. And so it was challenging for me to not work. But we were overseas and I was not a local national, so it was difficult to find work. I actually did work for a few months at a daycare and I almost lost my complete mind. And I worked in the nursery, and so that was sweet, but just the, it's not where I was supposed to be. And so then I quit. I pulled my kids out because they were also having challenges in the daycare. And so it was primarily led by pulling them out for a safer, more loving and nurturing environment. And I stayed home with them, like I said, for 4 years. COVID did happen in the midst of all of that, like a month before. But then also my husband was deployed at the time. And so it was just really too much. And I felt like we should just be home.
Yeah.
Right. And I did get restless, though. And so I went back to school. And I got a coaching certification. So I trained and got certified as a board certified coach, professional, like life coaching. And that's when I started working specifically like with parents, because I was in a space where I was like, this is wild, right? Yeah. And we need help. And so just being the person that I am, I think I identify problems and then I like to solve them. Yeah. And then I'd like to say, wow, like, you know, there's a solution to this problem and we can work through it together. But more so, I really like to hear other people's stories and just figure out how I can help them get from where they are now to where they want to be. And again, that's what drew me to being a program coach here, right? When I saw that on LinkedIn or Indeed or whatever, I was like, this is perfect.
Yeah, I'm your girl.
Yes, exactly. And I coached for a little while. I also got involved in a church locally there on base, and which is another story too, because I went through an extreme faith wrestle while we were in Germany. I call it my wilderness season. It was so hard, and it was a common experience for a lot of the families that were there. I mean, you think about being in a foreign country, far away from your family. And then of course, COVID did happen during that time. Very wilderness. And it was hard to find a church because you got to find one that speaks English. And then, there just weren't really a lot of options. And I think, too, when we first started church shopping or hunting, we were looking for the wrong things. You know what I mean? And so eventually I got plugged into a church and really connected with the chaplain's wife. It turns out we were like from the same city, Indianapolis.
Whoa.
Yeah. And had gone to the same university. And it was just fun, you know, because you meet somebody that you have things in common with. Mm-hmm. Right.
And then you have to say to yourself, okay, God,
yeah,
you know, what are the odds? And then you realize that things are connected.
Yes.
And I want to go back for folks who are listening to really think about the concept of the wilderness. There are so many times where the season is the wilderness, and sometimes the starting of motherhood is a wilderness, or a spouse being deported is a wilderness. So I like that you used that phrase, and I really want people to think about that. You know, there are lots of times, what's the kind of cheeky thing, there are years that ask the questions and there are years that answer.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love that actually, because so I started in a wilderness, but then also I had a season before we got to Germany where I felt like I was hidden, you know? And so when you talk about motherhood being a wilderness, and like I said, I was very career driven and focused before I became a mom. And that was hard for me to navigate. Yeah. You know, I didn't understand really how to.
How do you do them both?
Yeah. You well. Know, exactly. Well, because I try to do everything perfect, not well. So it was a huge struggle. And so anyway, I felt like I had been hidden for so long in our duty station in Tennessee. And then I carried that sense of hiddenness into the wilderness of Germany until, like I said, I had that faith wrestle. I got involved with the church. The chaplain's wife invited me to like a women's group. It was called the Protestant Women of the Chapel, where we did like Bible studies. It's like a women's group with a bunch of small groups for the military affiliated women. And that was really nice. And I met a lot of people and or something I was going to say specifically about that. I learned to embrace being hidden. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's like that was when I started coming out, I think, into the forefront. I was still very introverted, but learning how to lean into that. I actually read a book by Sarah Haggerty called Unseen, The Gift of Being Hidden or something like that. And it really changed my perspective on just being letting God work on me in those hidden places and then finding out where he is wanting to, like, use that fruit, right? Anyway, so
I identified heavily with that. I think as an introverted person myself, it's especially in the culture we live in of anything that happens, everyone has to know about it, right? You post it, you film it, whatever. But I throughout my life have wrestled with if something is just between me and God and I'm not okay with that, that's a problem. And so I just, yeah, anyways.
Yeah, no, I get that because it was really hard, you know. I think if I continue going backwards in my story, the social media became what it was, you know, in my young adulthood. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just like, I cannot keep up with this. And I tried for a little while, but then I'm just like, this isn't
right.
Who I am. And that is probably somewhere paralleled with me beginning to feel hidden because I wasn't willing to just be so out there, yep. I guess.
And I'm over here thinking, because I've always lived in the same community and so have generations of my family, and I've gone away to college or graduate school, but I'm also thinking the phenomenon of being the military spouse. So I really want our listeners to think about, do you know people who by the nature of their profession move? I mean, even being a pastor's wife, where there's a rotating nature, do you know people who are hidden because they are often new to a community? And social media could have been the only way you had a community or you kept a community. So just hearing you talk right now is making me think of things that I've never thought of before. Like how could we better support women or men who are spouses or, you know, because they have to be transient?
Yes, I really appreciate that. Because we're not always, especially in these communities where there's not a large military presence, we're not loud about being, you know, the new people here. And you know what? I think my kids deal with that in a different kind of way, all because they're 9 and 7, you know, so they're elementary school, second and third grade. And they've gone to 2 schools even since we've been here in Lynchburg and having to consistently be the new kid. But then not only the new kid, but like the other kids have they know each other, you know, and then they're different because they can't relate to all these different things, you know. But yes, I actually had my oldest son 2 weeks after graduating with my master's degree.
Wow.
Yeah. So I remember I was talking to my obstetrician, is that how you say that? About, I said, I want to go to my graduation. And she's like,
girl,
your insurance is not going, if you have that baby in Ohio, you know, and I'm like,
It doesn't matter.
We're going.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And so, and I did. My face was so swollen. Oh my gosh, the pictures. I don't even like to show them. But nonetheless, I did. I graduated with my master's 3 weeks before my due date. And I think that's important for me to say because literally prior to, it was when I got pregnant that I started to realize that I needed to shift my focus and I didn't know how, you know, and it's like kind of all or nothing. Like I need to be solely focused on my child because at the time I was moving into single motherhood until I met my now husband, who I feel like everybody knows more than they know me because he's incredibly extroverted and social, which I'm not mad about. So let me go back some more. When I was maybe in the sixth grade, I remember telling my mom, like I was on my way to school, we were headed out the door and I was crying. And it's funny to me now because my oldest son is kind of really sentimental like this too. Mm. And so I'm just like, oh gosh.
My daughter is in the sixth grade and it has been a really interesting experience. So do tell what happened to you that was like life changing.
Literally.
In the sixth grade.
Yeah. So I was crying and my mom's like, Raven, you know, what happened? And I told her that I was afraid that I wasn't going to be able to make a difference.
Aww.
And I remember her just being, and she's still like this today because I say things sometimes and it just really, she gets taken aback. She's like, what? You know? And I'm like,
get in the car.
Right. Like, what are you talking about? Oh, making right. a difference. And I told her that, you know, the people that I wanted to help, I didn't feel like they would listen to me because I didn't have their shared life experience.
Wow.
I mean, I was raised in a single parent home. I have a younger brother. We're 3 years apart and it was just the three of us. My dad was involved, but not in the home because he was in the military. Mm-hmm. So my parents divorced when I was around three. And he stayed in the military and moved around a lot. But he was involved. Like, we talked on the phone a lot, and he was very financially supportive. And so my childhood still looked a lot different from my peers'. And I was a good kid by all intents and purposes. Straight A's. I never got in trouble. I wasn't, like, loud in the class. Not until high school. Okay. In high school, I think I found a side of myself that was really interesting, and I was louder. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
There's some stories there.
Right. There are. I became very opinionated and, like, you know, just hard, difficult, probably for some of my teachers. But anyway, I wanted to help them. And I just felt like, I don't know where the fear came from that they wouldn't listen to me. Mm-hmm. But I knew that we were different and I wanted to make a difference in their lives. And so that's where my interest in criminal justice came from. I wanted to be a criminal defense attorney. At the time, all I knew was there was the D home, the mm-hmm. detention center, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm like, I'll work in the D home. But as you grow, you learn more mm-hmm. opportunities and ways to help and get involved. I was going to consider pre-law, but where I was, it was like law and society. So I did that. And then I learned that the courts are crooked and I'm like, not doing that. And then because I feel like people didn't stand a chance yeah. half the time, right? And so I moved out of the courts into corrections. And so when I went in to get my master's degree, I thought, well, so people are here now in the justice system. How can we help them not be back? Mm. And when they do get released, that they're able to reintegrate into society and become productive, right?
So that was a spirit of reconciliation.
At a young age.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Wow.
Always. That's always been like my passion, mm-hmm. Reconciliation.
Allison and I are excited to talk to you about our very first sponsor of the Mended Futures podcast, Mission House Coffee.
Mission House is locally owned, and their goal is to be a place that is known for delicious coffee, obviously, food and baked goods, and beloved care and acceptance they show to the people that they serve.
They also have their own coffee distributor called Mission House Roasters, where you can order their signature blends online and start brewing your own Mission House coffee right in your home.
One of my favorite things about Mission House and the name Mission is they have a pay it forward board where you can purchase something for someone else in the community and leave a nice note, an affirmation, or you can go to the board and pick something that applies to you. So it's a way to serve your neighbors and show love to people that we don't even know.
Mm-hmm. So come on down to Mission House Coffee and experience a place where you feel an abundant sense of love and acceptance from their staff and the community they serve.
Anyway, I was pursuing a federal postal inspector job. That's where the law enforcement comes from. My grandmother worked, she retired from USPS. And so she told me about this position that only comes open every so often, mm-hmm. right? And so when the application opened, I started to apply. Then I got pregnant and then I was like, I am not leaving my kid, you know, to go to Quantico and train. Mm-hmm. I was researching like how to send breast milk on dry ice.
Wow.
I'm like, I can't do this, you know? And so when I was 6 months pregnant, going through that application, finishing my master's degree, that's when I met my husband, you know, and we dated for, I think we got married when my oldest, well, at the time was 6 months. So we probably dated for almost a year before we got married. And then he joined the military. So whatever I thought I was going to do, mm-hmm. I started doing something else.
Yeah.
So that is why my academic and professional experience is so varied. Even before I graduated in undergrad, I've always sought ways to do what I want to do now. And the way to do that is volunteering, right? You can't always find the job that you want or get the job that you want, but a lot of these places take volunteers.
Say that louder for the people. Whenever anybody comes to me and says, I really want to do this, but there are no job openings, volunteer. Sometimes they'll hire you.
Exactly.
So listen to Raven.
Volunteer. Like, seriously. And so whenever I volunteered, I was like an all-in committed volunteer. So I had a weekly schedule.
Knowing what we know.
I know. Weekly, I was showing up, big events. I was helping out, you know, and definitely pre-motherhood, pre-marriage. I mean, there was one point in time where I was working. So this is after I graduated from Purdue. I was supposed to be going backwards. So also in undergrad, I did 2 undergraduate research positions. I worked in a clinical psychology lab. It wasn't volunteering. It's like, you know, credit for mm-hmm. courses. Mm-hmm. And then also a social cognition lab. And when I worked in the clinical psych lab, that professor is the one who actually hired me and gave me my first job after college. And it's so funny because, like, I had taken some courses of his also, and he taught a juvenile delinquency course.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, it was like an honors level kind of, you know, small class, but obviously I was interested in it and he was amazing. But there were times where I would skip the class altogether. And so when he told me, like, I'm thinking I'm just kind of flying under the radar, and he tells me that he wants to meet and talk to me about an opportunity, and it was to lead the research out in the real world, because what I was doing as a student was helping him and his graduate students in the prep of it, right? Setting it all up. And then by the time I had graduated, I graduated in December of 2012. February 2013 is when it all like launched. And he hired me to be the the project coordinator for that. And so I was managing all of the daily operations. I had, I think, 2 staff to like help, and like a host of volunteers and interns. And that was really interesting. It wasn't juvenile delinquency related, but it was aggression related, which is highly related.
Correlated, yeah.
Exactly.
So your current job right now really connects mm-hmm. back to your love of research,
yes.
the importance of data.
Yes.
That's fascinating.
Yes, it is. And I think, again, because it wasn't all intentional. Like, I didn't know. I hope I don't give off the impression that I knew what I was doing. I was just following what I felt like I loved mm-hmm. and what what I could see. Mm-hmm. But I did not know that it was all going to be connected in the way that it is now. But yeah, I did love research, and I'm not sure what drew me to it. I think it's because I knew I wanted to get my PhD. At one point in time, I thought about switching to psychology altogether because I did have that dual, that double bachelor situation. But I didn't want to do research because, like, in academia, because I felt like it was too far removed from the people it was supposed to impact.
It's in a controlled setting.
Yeah, exactly. And so I talked to my advisor, the person who hired me. And I was telling him, you know, well, we've been doing this work for a while. I'm considering my next move career-wise. And I was trying to figure out what I should do. And I'm like, I don't want to pursue the PhD. And I do, though, still want to be involved in research. And he said something about a DSW. I'll never forget, because he was like, it's not just a shoe store. And I was like, I don't want to do social work, though, because at the time I thought social work was just all boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be in the research of it. I did not know then what I know now, that that's like the program evaluation realm of things. Anyway, by the time I got married, my husband was ready to move to his first duty station. We moved to Tennessee, and I was looking for a job. That's where I got my first evaluation position. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so there I was working for internally for a research institute on a SAMHSA grant, a couple SAMHSA grants, doing integrated health research for the clients that we were serving, right? When I was working with that, my first job, actually, it was alcohol research, which was really interesting, because we would actually administer alcohol to the, not clients, participants, mm-hmm. get them above a 0.08, and then set them up on a simulated aggression, you know, game task, that was couples related. Mm-hmm. So we were studying intimate partner violence and the mediators, how alcohol kind of mediates that. Mm-hmm. I think I learned that nothing is wasted, mm-hmm. you know, because I just got chills when I said that. Yeah. Because there, like I said, I felt like, you know, I had all this experience prior to motherhood and marriage. And then now I'm just being a mom and being a wife, you know,
as if it were just
exactly. And so, but I just, anyway, nothing is wasted. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. And, I was a CASA volunteer for a year. So I was working full time at the lab. I was working part time at a senior living facility as a concierge. I was, pursuing my master's degree part time when I did decide to do that. I was a CASA. I had one case, two kids, and I did volunteer at the, a cancer support community. I volunteered there because my mother is a stage 4 cancer survivor.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I was looking for ways to get plugged into places. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So I did that for a year. And then I was also volunteering at the police department doing victims mm-hmm. assistance. And that wasn't as hands-on as I would have wanted it to be. So I didn't do it for very long. But I mean, I was doing all these things at one time, you know, and it wasn't until I got pregnant where I was like, okay, well, I can't commit to being a CASA because that's very involved, you know. And I quit my part-time job so that I could finish my degree. And I went full-time on that. And then, yeah, we moved. But to just kind of finish out my varied history and volunteer and professional experience, when I was in undergrad, I volunteered for a little over a year at a women's shelter, mm-hmm. domestic violence victims. Yeah, mm-hmm. That sounded weird. But yeah, I did that for about a year. Very consistent there as well. And then when I was in high school, I started volunteering because, like I said, I knew that I needed to get experience, legal experience, not the bad kinds of experiences. So I thought I'd find out how to meet people where they are. And so I started tutoring in math. And even back then, like, it's funny because I say now that I don't really like math, which is odd because I work with numbers.
Yeah, you're a data analyst.
Yeah, but I've learned that the secret sauce to making math magic is like formulas in Excel. So I don't have to be the math whiz, you know? Anyway, so back then though, I was in Mu Alpha Theta. And so I had an opportunity to tutor math for small children at a church. So I did that for some time. But I've just always been a volunteer, you know? If I was able to survive off of volunteering, I think I probably still would because it's just so meaningful for organizations even. But anyway, that's, I'm rabbit trailing. And
no, I think that's important because when you think about the concept of Vision 30, when you think about the concept of being the village for preventing societal problems, intervening with families, helping families reconcile, there's a difference between being paid to do it and there's a difference between volunteering to do it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have expertise in a certain area to be impactful along the river. And
you just have to be willing.
Right.
Willing.
And I know I've said this so many times. Oftentimes your clients think that you're doing something because you get paid to do it. There's not that same stigma or fear if it's a volunteer. Yeah. So I do think it's so important that you've mentioned volunteering as many times as you have, because that's the first and easiest step to finding your place along the river.
Yeah. I mean, truly, it is.
Or places.
And places, yeah. And the just the people that God wants you to meet. There's a level of obedience and surrender that comes with volunteering. And I volunteered a lot with like the Army's PTO is what I call it. It's called the Soldier and Family Readiness Group. And at three of our different units, I was like the treasurer, but that's where I'm able to get in and impact change for families, right? For our families. And when I was going to that church in Germany, I volunteered. I was appointed, though, so it's different. I wasn't paid. So I was technically still a volunteer, but to be the director of Christian education. And so I did that for about a year, like helping families, impacting spiritual formation, I guess, in discipleship. And that was really impactful, too, because I started teaching Sunday school. And I learned a lot there about kids. And that's where I started thinking to myself that being trauma informed is really important. I'll just say that. And that's what led me to pursue now my doctorate in education. And I'm interested in pastoral counseling, actually, and bringing a trauma informed lens to reconciliation, much of like what we do here, but you don't always see it happening in the church, right?
Totally. So I think the last question we need to hear the answer to is, are you the product of a mended future?
So definitely, you know, I think there are a lot of ways I could answer that. And I feel like the first kind of reaction is to think about people who have stepped into my story somewhere along the line. But I think for me, my future is being mended many times over by God, because it's just, I came across this word recently called, well, it's not new, I don't even want to say called, but restoring. And you know, I think it's easy to feel as though the life that you had before cannot be redeemed. Like you can't step into a new season and be a new person because of all of the things that you've like done or all of the things that have happened to you or like whatever. And I'm learning, like I said earlier, that nothing is wasted and that the story that we have, especially when we do begin to follow and walk with the Lord, your story does not get erased. It takes on new meaning that you did not know anything about before. And it becomes a story that you're supposed to tell. We call it a testimony, right, in the church. And I think that my relationship with the Lord mends my future daily, but I have to go back to when I was in high school, when I first started going to church. And I didn't grow up in a church family. We went to church on occasion, you know, with my grandmother, who still goes to the same church she was going to back then, and my great grandmother. And I remember I had to have been a senior, maybe a junior in high school, around the time where you're looking at colleges and applying for scholarships and things. And there was this one scholarship in particular. I've told this story to some people, I think on the care team probably, but where the Black churches in the area get together around January, and they put on a actually, I think it's in February because it's in Black History Month. And so they give scholarships and put on this huge program that is largely ran by the students who are receiving the scholarships. Anyway, so I have this teacher who's involved in that program in our neighborhood, in our community. And she suggested that I apply for the scholarship. And I told her, I looked at it, you know, and I said, well, because you look at the eligibility criteria and you have to have like letters of recommendation from your pastoral leadership. And I didn't go to church. And so I'm like, I don't apply for this. Like, I can't, I'm not eligible for this scholarship. Well, I thought that that would be a one and done kind of a thing, but she would not let it go. And so I, she taught like all the social studies courses and like, well, a lot of them anyway. And she would come out and stand like in the hallway and, you know, during passing periods and stuff like that. And so I would see her there and I knew she's very much like, you know, like this, right? I don't even have the word for it, but that's just
look. She gave you the teacher look
all the time. You know, she meant business, and she was known for that. She's great though. And anyway, so I would try to avoid her because I'm like, she's going to ask me. I've already told her I don't go to church. I cannot apply for this scholarship. And she did. Every time I saw her, she's like, I haven't seen that application come through. And I'm just like, and you won't, because I don't go to church. So anyway, at one point she asked me again, and she might have actually made a suggestion that I, like, you know, figure it out some kind of way. And so I started attending with a different relative of mine, and I was there with an agenda. I mean, I think we have to be honest about that. And I was going to join. And so I did. I got baptized, and it was a whole thing. Story for another day. And then I actually ended up moving churches because of that story. And my aunt and I, we moved to a different church, and it was that church that I joined, and it was more authentic. And that's the pastoral leadership that recommended me for the scholarship. And I was awarded the highest scholarship from, I think they did like five of them, you know, and got to participate in that. And it was a wonderful opportunity. But I think what's really interesting about that is there were a lot of kids, you know, that I saw, like, as I was seeing all the kids, right? And I knew they were church affiliated and I wasn't. And I had this sense that I didn't belong, like I couldn't go unless one of them invited me, I guess. I don't know, kid stuff. And so I felt like I wanted to be in church, but I didn't know how to get there. Like, I didn't know that I guess I could just show up, because it felt like a closed society, if I'm being honest. And that's how I viewed it. I have that language now. But and so I never went. And then this opportunity gave me an open door, and I started attending regularly. And, you know, I wish I could say that from that point on, I was walking with the Lord, but I wasn't, you know. And nonetheless, I can definitely look back and see the hand of God mending my future, like I said, many times over. And I think that point where Mrs. Owensby was on me about getting that application on her desk, I don't think she even knew what was pulling her to really be persistent about that. You know what I mean?
And looking back, that that was your entry point. Mm-hmm. Have you told her that?
I haven't,
because
actually.
I may be the social studies teacher in some people's story like that. And I would want to hear that really? Story if one of my students was thinking that. So I challenge you, if she's still around, to tell her that story.
Yeah.
Because as an educator, as a person who works with young people, you're just constantly sowing the seeds. And to so many people, it doesn't matter if you ever see the harvest, mm-hmm. but you are definitely the harvest.
Wow. Thank you. I will reach out to her. Mm-hmm. Because I know she's still doing it. I've heard. Mm-hmm. She is a fierce woman. Okay?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yes.
I'm sure to get you to do something that you didn't want to do, she had to be fierce.
She was fierce.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
My goodness.
I just, one final yes. wrap up. If you have something to add, go for it. But I just want to give you the opportunity, you know, I think we're similar in the sense that we don't really share about ourselves unless prompted. And so I'm grateful for the chance to have gotten to know you for the purposes of the podcast, but just in general. Now that you have this space where you're being prompted and it's it's an appropriate time to share or give advice or prompt yourself, is there anything that you'd like to say to the people listening?
Wow. Aw, you're so sweet. I love that because I actually thought about that. I asked my husband last night. I was like, you know, because I know people often have a lot of misconceptions about me, whether it's just simply not knowing or just flat out kind of wrong, conceptions. But I think I really want people to know how much I desire reconciliation in their lives, you know, how much I really desire for people to find freedom, and how much I have committed making myself available in that pursuit. Even recently, I started a blog, which was largely inspired by Claudia.
Of course.
Yeah, she'll probably laugh because I emailed her about it. And so, where I'm talking about my faith wrestling, because like I said, you know, reconciling, there are a lot of, I hate to see people walk away from the faith, and I know what it's like to feel that tension. And so, I mean, in every way that I can, I make every effort to help people find freedom from whatever they feel like they're bound to. And that being said, I don't always look like an approachable person to come to wrestle with stuff. But I am. You know, I actually recently found out that I have ADHD.
Whoa.
I know. And there are things, I guess, as a result of that, that cause me to, you know, be certain kinds of ways and seem like I'm not really interested in people when I really am, you know. It's something that I, now that I know better, I want to be more intentional about trying to overcome that. And by being more invested in the lives of the people closest to me, right? But I think I want people to know, you know, if I'm sitting around frowning about something, it's probably because I'm in a metacognitive state.
You're in your own, you're just thinking. After listening to you, you're in your own head in so many ways.
Yes.
But I think what you just said is what you told your mom when you were in the sixth grade.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Full circle. Nothing is wasted.
I love that.
This has been awesome. Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Mended Futures podcast, hosted by Allison Jordan and Taylor Melvin, produced by Liam Chafin, Sue England, Allison Jordan, Robert Day, Sully Jugar, and Taylor Melvin. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like, share, and subscribe to see more.